Ons voor jou, Wat Nou? Die podcast. Come join the conversation with three South African guys as they discuss the challenges and ervarings of life as a SEFA expat. Listen, share and form part of this expat community.
How's it and welcome to episode 3 of Ons voor jou, Wat Nou? The podcast. Today we're going to cover all the admin ducks that you have to get in a row before you immigrate, move overseas, or whatever you want to call it. But just looking across the table, I'm seeing my co-host, each with a beer in the hand. See ya, Corey. I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing well, thanks, everyone. I have a slight hangover, but at least it's not a murg bablas. But no, otherwise, doing well. Sun is shining, and I think summer's around the corner.
Great. En jou, Corey?
Nee, lekker man. Ek is nou net terug van 'n week in Ibiza. So jy hoor my nie klaar nie. Ja, yeah, and luckily now the sun is shining on this side as well. So looking forward to the summer that's actually started now.
Hoor jy, het 'n bietjie kleur gekry. Ek sien dit nou eers.
Ek het mos nou een episode gesê ek het nie geweet ek kan so lig word nie. Nou sien jy hoe ek gedink het ek lyk.
Want ek your normal skin color basically.
Ek kyk nou al vir so 'n uur en iets is anders, maar nou weet ek wat dit is.
Ja, so gesonde gloei.
Hoorie, voor ons op die episode gaan fokus, wat in die laaste maand of twee, sou julle sê, was die expat dinge wat julle aangepak het? Ek bedoel, ek en Winnie het gaan tulpe kyk, in Nederland is dit 'n redelike groot ding. So we went to Lisse in Hillegom and we did the whole flower route, if I can call it that. And we also enjoyed the terrasse, you know, the outdoor seating areas of the restaurants these last few weeks. What did you get up to?
Well, yeah, I just sort of mentioned we just went to Ibiza for a week. It's not an expat thing per se, but it's quite close to...
But it's a little bit of a fine brag, if you ask me.
Yeah, no, it's... I'm not complaining. So that was nice. And also, before we left, every 10 minutes of sunshine that there was, I sat like a gecko in the sunshine to try and absorb that. So that's a bit my expat stuff.
So, yes, 3 weeks ago, I assisted, Corey, you were also involved, moving one of our good friends, Armand de Boot, from Brabra, Breda, all the way to the north of the country. And I mean, yes, from South Africa, where you come from, you normally have a lot of furniture and you rent one of these freaking big trucks to move your entire house from point A to point B. And I mean, we were carrying stuff, drilling and everything going... The whole freaking day. And that was pretty expat in my eyes, packing up a whole apartment and moving it across the country and helping him to get into a new place. That was my experience in the last two months.
That's awesome. I saw it on the one WhatsApp group that you guys thought you're getting a little busy. And when you got there, it was just a normal small car and all the furniture need to fit in there. Is that the reason why you had to travel, you know, back to Breda for a second time as well? What was it?
If we would really had to fit it into that klein karretjie.
Yeah, I think there was actually a small car, that picture that I took.
Would have been like 60 trips just to put one IKEA cupboard to Amsterdam.
Yeah, no, but that photo, it was just a joke, that photo. We luckily got a truck at the end.
Oh, awesome. Okay, guys. So we're gonna get back to what it's all about today, and that is the admin stuff. What the things that you need to consider and get in place before you move abroad. And we were lucky enough to have a guest, or it's not actually a guest. It's our first voice note input from one of our valued listeners, Pietri. Thank you very much. So yeah, I asked her. You know, what do you need to take into consideration when you're actually moving abroad? Because they are in the process. So Ewald and Pietri, they are in the process of moving to Canada. And there's a host of things to actually consider. And I asked her the question when she replied with a voice note that we'll play just now. I realized that, wow, I almost forgot most of these things. And it's not all of that's also not relevant for all the countries. So yeah, let's just have a listen to Pietri.
Hello, podcast listeners. Thank you to everyone for asking me to be a part of this exciting project. So, I was asked to just give a brief overview of what the process of immigrating involves. My husband and I started our process for Canada about 2 years ago, and we're almost on our way. Unfortunately, COVID is not making it easier for us. But, so let's start. For us, we had to do a few things to qualify for an express entry program with permanent residency. This system works on a point-based system, and all applicants are thrown into a pool once the application and documents have been completed. Every few weeks, applicants with the highest scores are drawn and invited to the country. So, firstly, we had to have our degrees or qualifications assessed by a credential evaluation company. This is a document that certifies that you indeed do hold a certain degree or certificate. The company we used was World Educational Services, or WES. This was done by sending all relevant documents to Canada for assessment. Then we had to do a language test to establish our competency in the English language. In our case, it was the IELTS test, but this may differ for different countries. This test can be taken in Pretoria, Cape Town, and Johannesburg. The last documents we obtained from our local Home Affairs department, and this included the unabridged birth certificates and unabridged marriage certificate. Lastly, a police clearance document is required that can be applied for from any police station. So once all our documents were ready, we were able to submit our application and wait for the invite. We eventually got an invite, and then we had to do our biometrics at a visa application center. Here you'll be required to take your valid passport to the center, where they will then take your fingerprints and a photo for your visa. Then the only thing left to do in terms of documents, you have to undergo a comprehensive medical examination. During this test, they will carry out a physical examination, run blood tests, and do a chest x-ray. So although all of this might sound daunting at the start, it gets easier as you continue with the process. I hope this was able to help a few people that might be considering exploring new countries and what they have to offer.
Okay, awesome. So that's quite comprehensive. She mentions there that the point-based system, she mentions biometrics, medical examination, getting your qualification accredited or assessed, English requirements, and I'll tell you about my English test that I had to take in New Zealand. Wow. And then there's a few other things, police clearance certificates and birth certificates, marriage certificates. What did you take out of that? What's interesting? Because Corey, you are here with dual citizenships, like we've mentioned in a few of the episodes. So you probably did not have to do a lot of these things or any of them at all. What did you have to get in place?
Yeah, no, for me, that sounds like a big headache. I basically just packed my bags and got on the plane and left, in that sense, in terms of admin-related things. But yeah, if I listen to the amount of things that they need to get in place, it's, from what I've heard, for people coming to the Netherlands, it's a bit of a Big Brother is watching type thing. But this is quite intense, because they have all your info from day one. It's quite a process. I'm very happy I didn't have to do that. But yeah, interesting.
You did have the very first and most important thing in place, and that's a passport, valid passport.
That's true. It was valid, luckily.
Because we can't just rock up to airport. I see you can't just rock up to airport and move to a new country and just decide, okay, off you go. So what did you got in place? Is there anything that, on this list, there's probably a few things, but was all the things relevant to you when you came across to the Netherlands?
Well, actually, let's say the paperwork per se, I think is pretty much in line and stock standard, the process that I had to go through. But in terms of medical checks, I didn't really have to do any, let's say, medical background checks or like that she mentioned now, which sounded like quite an onerous process, to be quite honest. But I didn't go through anything like that. But I can actually share a story with the listeners. So once I rocked up here, and I don't know whether it's still the case, but back then it was, if you came from African countries to the Netherlands 2 or 3 years ago, I actually had to undergo a couple of TB tests, believe it or not, as they viewed the African countries as a high risk, bringing across let's say, a disease of that magnitude. But so actually, I had to go for quite a bunch of TB tests. And I think at the end of that, it was 5 or 6. Every 6 months, you go for a TB test. And the very first TB test that I went to in the Netherlands, so I rock up there, I think it was month 2 or month 3 in my time here. And obviously, you know, vanzelfsprekend, my Dutch wasn't that good. Obviously, you can understand a little bit, but you do miss the, let's say, direct indications or very specific indications that they tell you what to do. So I got there, the lady took me to this, let's say, clearance hockey where you now undress, and then she gives you one of these medical yashas, you know, like it's like a voorskoot type of thing, and then you just tired you at the back, right? And she told me that I had to get undressed and then just put this thing, because the TB machine is literally, I'll quickly display it. Unfortunately, we don't have a camera, but you literally then go and stand in front of a wall, and your nose is like touching. There's a red cross where your nose has to touch the wall, but you have this yashia on, and then the machine takes a snapshot picture from behind, you know, obviously going through your freaking ribs and your...
So it's an X-ray.
Yeah, it's okay. Basically X-ray, but then it takes it from all angles. And I misunderstood it. So I thought I had to get completely naked for this thing. True story. And so I wore the yas, and obviously it goes down to your knees, but the backside is completely open because it's just a strip that they tie out. So I think she got a heart attack when she saw me put all naked, butt naked there standing, looking at the Roy Kreis. And then she told me, you know, look, next time you can leave your underbrook on. But so that's basically the medical post-move check that I had to do. But pre the move, I didn't have to do anything specific on that. But I do actually think, you know, with the current pandemic that we're in, countries might, for example, the Netherlands, Belgium, France, I don't know, majority of Western Europe, as I'm thinking about it, might maybe implement some of these, let's say, measure checks to make sure, you know, you're free of, I don't know what, TB or whatever the case might be, that countries might get a little bit more strict on that. But yeah, it's weird because, I mean, you didn't do any TB tests. We spoke earlier about it. And for me, that's weird because I know all my colleagues also had to go through this TB process. And then just one day they stop to give you letters in the post saying, okay, you have a next TB appointment. Because I think they test you, you know, 4 or 5 runs, and then they put you in the clear box type of thing.
You see, maybe I was lucky that Tani didn't want to see my red cross, but but I also think just before we moved here, we lived in New Zealand for 2, almost 3 years, but we did go back to South Africa, traveling Namibia and Botswana for a bit. So yeah, maybe they just missed us. Lucky.
Yeah, I don't know. I know actually because my a friend of mine moved from Vienna to the Netherlands. And he also got exemption in terms of that because he's been used to stay then, I think, a year or year and a half in Vienna already before he made the move to the Netherlands. And he actually got exempted from that. But I mean, he freaking moved to Vienna a year earlier. So he wouldn't have been out of that period and actually doing the TB tests, which is funny enough. But I guess then you were also falling in the lucky category.
Yeah, I think I'm lucky.
Yeah, but it's quite interesting because I would imagine, but I don't understand it all. As you ink in the TB, then I hit you at knee. So why would you have to go for the test 5 times?
Yeah, same question.
Maybe
came
she
up.
Wanted to see CS Red Cross a few more times or something.
Yes, I hope.
By the fifth time, when she found out, now he's actually wearing his undies, she stopped sending him these letters in the
he's
post.
Invited, huh?
I'm quickly going to run through the list just to make sure that we cover most of it. We're obviously going to miss a few, but then there's obviously the awesome listener that will remind us on Instagram direct message or via the website or email to add on to this list. So I'm going to go through the list. It's just going to be a read off, and then we're going to focus on 2 or 3 of them. Okay. So the first, and I believe the most important thing, is obviously a valid passport. Then you need a visa or a residency permit. And it actually quite differs from country to country with which visas you can go, whether work visa or just a long-term visa or a residency or permanent residency. Then a police clearance certificate that you get from the police, obviously, and then binnelandse sake. Kijk, my man, gaan vir jou bezig hou met jou geboortesertifikaat in.
The good old traditional home affairs.
Die mouthguard ding wat jy genoem het op die vorige...
Absolutely.
And at that, yeah, same home affairs, you need to get a marriage certificate. Or if you're not married and you're traveling across or moving across with your partner, you need to get proof of partnership. That is, you know, proof of living together for 12 months or I think maybe having a kid together qualifies. I'm not sure. Might be. Then the English requirements. I want to get back into this later, but for some reason they think we can't speak English. And if they listen to this podcast, they might...
They might keep thinking that.
Their reasoning might be actually justified, but in any case... Then the qualifications, weet jy, studeer jou gat af. Ons het nie daai studente gewees wat elke aand gaan drink het nie. Is dit, hoe was julle?
As jy sê ons, dan wie verwys jy?
Nee, ek spot. Partykeer sê ek ook maar my kwalifikasies so 2 of 3 keer deurlees, net om seker te maak. Then the medical is assessment, we had a chat about that. And proof of job. You know, to New Zealand, you can't just, we couldn't just go over. We had to have a, like a proof of a job offer on that side. Proof of accommodation for the first month or 3 months, or I think it's a month. And depending on what visa you move over, you need to have proof of funds so you can support yourself in the other country for a few months. The biometrics, yeah, fingerafdrukke and eye scans and whatnot, maybe DNA, I'm not sure. And then some countries works with a point-based system. So that's the stuff that I could come up with. There's potentially other things. I know age is a big criteria. Some countries, if you're over the, I think if you're over 55, it becomes difficult. And if you're younger and there's more years that you can actually go and work in that country, it's obviously easier. So out of these, I wanted to quickly discuss the English requirements and then the qualifications. Always fun to talk about student days, isn't it? And yeah, let's see if there's time for another one. Did you ever think you would be asked to qualify the fact that you speak English or that you English your English fluency? I know in the Netherlands they don't ask us that.
No, it's coming from South Africa, for us it's all sort of vanzelfsprekend that jy een of ander vlak van Engels het. So we never I don't think there are so many people going from somewhere else to South Africa. But maybe they also have to do some kind of English test, but we won't know.
Maybe there's a few coming from China and Asian countries. You never know. I haven't heard of any of them maybe having to do some English test or some English requirements that they have to meet.
Yeah.
And do you in the Netherlands, Sia?
No, not specifically. But I think, in my opinion, it does make sense to almost set, let's say, some sort of a criteria or requirement for you in order to speak the language. Let's say Belgium or the Netherlands aside, because I mean, okay, it is obviously like Dutch, Flemish, etc. But I mean, everyone here can speak English. But I mean, if you, let's say, move to Canada or let's say Bumblefuck Australia, whatever the case might be, the language there is predominantly English. So yeah. If you can't speak, let's say, even a freaking one sentence of English, you know, there is no substitute language there over there in order to get assisted in, let's say, a supermarket or a hospital or whatever the case might be. So, and I think, well, it's not necessarily the case, but I think predominantly everyone in the world knows some sort of an English or whatever. But you do maybe get some Asian countries where it's not, English isn't in the focus. And then I think, you know, these certain countries can implement a language test. In my mind, what I'm actually trying to say is I think it does make sense. I don't think it's a stupid requirement. Like if I was to set up a list of requirements, and I know that, you know, they in the past it's shown that there was maybe a little bit of a struggle of people coming into the country and not being able to speak the language. It is a massive barrier, not only for you, but also, let's say, the country itself to assist and get the ball rolling in terms of that. You know?
Yeah, well, I think you both mentioned Asia now, but if you just take, we were on the golf tour in Spain, and yeah, I just been to Spanish Island now.
Yes, but they're, it also sounds like you're living a good life, eh?
Hey, man, you are living part of that. But now, even there, when you sit in a restaurant or something, those people also don't speak any form of English. So I think it's quite relevant for a lot of countries, especially countries also where their mother tongue is still the most spoken, where English doesn't have such a big impact. So I think it makes sense, but I just think for us as coming from a sort of English-based country, it's not something that pops into your head from day one.
Yeah, because I had the discussion with a friend, Richard, you guys name, Regi Hoopipadra.
I
had the discussion with him, and he actually said something that's very true. As South Africans, we grow up watching American movies or British movies, or I don't know if you watch Bollywood movies, but the point is you watch English movies from all over the world, and you learn how to adjust to different accents and hear different accents, and our English is quite evolved in that manner. But yeah, guys from India, Bollywood is pretty big there, so they watch Bollywood movies, perhaps, I'm just thinking. Or from America, they watch American movies, they don't go and watch South African movies, so they're not exposed to the South African accent that much. Okay, Trevor Noah and Charlize Theron is over there, so potentially. But the point is, our English as South Africans, I would think we're pretty good at English, although we've got a strong accent and that, but we can hear and communicate, and that's probably the most important thing. But I had to go and do an English test, and it's quite long. We did the PTE test, and I'm not sure what it stands for. The other one is TEFL, and Pietri also named a test. But I think there's four or five tests that you can do to actually prove your English fluency. But I remember sitting in that test, so you sit in Swahili, eh? There's 13 other people around you, and then they read something to you on the screen, and then you have to reply, or you have to type, or you have to write an essay, or they might play a video and you might have to write a summary. I'm pretty sure halfway through that exam, I thought, I know nothing about English. Now, I was sure I'm going to flunk it. And lucky enough, I passed. It was op my gat velle, deurgeskier. But that was a scary experience, because we went there on a work visa, so you didn't need that English fluency requirement tick next to your name. But then once you wanted to reply for a residency passport, a residency visa there, or the permanent residency option, as we did, you then had to show that you could actually speak the language, or you had to have stayed there for a certain amount of years. And we haven't been there for that minimum criteria. So we had to go and do this test. Horrible experience. And just to make it worse, Laverne got 99 or 99 point something. She made one mistake out of 500 questions or whatever it was. So that didn't make me feel too great.
Yeah, but maybe it's you thought it's the South Africans in general, but maybe your English is just subpar.
It is.
Nelspruit Engels.
Dit was 'n bietjie Nelspruit Engels, maar daar was so 'n Brazil vroutjie langs my. As sy deurgekom het, weet ek nie hoor. That was horrible. I couldn't understand it. So, but that was it on the language thing. So that's a pretty big thing if you do move wherever. I know in Canada and in Australia and New Zealand that there's some requirements around that. But then the other one is the qualifications. Ek het op Tikkie studeer, hele manne pikke, en ons het goeie kwalifikasies, lekker tyd gehad, weet, ook in die klasse, maar meestal in die keier areas. So, wat, hoe sal jy nou voel as hulle vir jou vra, jou kwalifikasie moet geakkrediteer word? Bro, dit is voel vir my so 'n bietjie 'n klap in die gesig. If you move to New Zealand, or because I had to do it, or Canada, like Pietri just mentioned, they have to actually show that their qualifications meet a certain standard. Is it something, is it a biggie, or is it expected?
No, I think it's expected. I know in the Netherlands there's also a agency or something that can verify your qualifications. I think where the difficulty comes, and I think maybe relevant for when we studied, but even still now, even though South Africa is maybe seen as a country where education might not be on par with the rest of the world, it doesn't mean that our qualifications weren't and aren't good. Mm. I know I had a professor who also went to Canada for a period of time, and when she came back, she also told us that the quality of of work and the studies that we follow is very much on par with them.
Yeah.
It's the only that they rate the universities low, and by default then your qualification might be scrutinized a bit more. But I do understand that the countries want to see that what you've studied, jy het nie net geleer om 10 maal tafel te doen en nou gat jy nie. But I think it could be a bit unfair if you think I really studied my ass off and now they are going to stand in question if I really have a good qualification.
Yeah, well, that's how I felt. But as you spoke about, it actually makes sense for them to check, because you don't know somebody out of Romania or call it Indonesia. Or, you know, I don't know that country.
Romania, no.
I don't know the country, so I don't know the qualifications that you get there. But also something that you did mention is it's not specifically the qualification or the level of our education. It's actually got to do with the ranking of the university, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then there's a few things that impact that. It's not just how many Nobel Prize winners you have.
No, it's also the country where it's in.
Yeah.
Yeah, and look, the thing is, I think with that set of requirements or that list of requirements, it is a filtering process. They need to, let's say, approve you almost to come in, if I can say it like that. So in my mind, look, I don't see it as a clap in the gezicht necessarily. I just see it as maybe one of the things that actually does need to happen in order for you to enter into the, let's say, country.
Yeah, because I think they have their citizens. So if someone from outside wants to come in, they obviously want the best of people from other countries. So that's why I think what Sia mentioned, by filter wat hulle opsit, ja, hulle wil die mense wat hulle ekonomie gaan help groei, wat 'n positiewe bydrae gaan lewer. So yeah, I think to summarize that is, even though we might, or people immigrating might see this as a big process and it's difficult and soms a klap in die gesig type thing, I think in general it's understandable, and if we would be the president or the whatever of a country, you would also just want the best A-plus citizens. So yeah, it's maybe a tedious process, but quite understandable.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay, moving on to the other one that I wanted to touch on is the marriage certificate. Because we had a bit of an incident before we moved here, and apparently everybody knew about it except me and my HR, is the apostilled, and I'm still not sure if I said correct, the apostilled marriage certificates. So it would not be applicable to you, and no. See, not to you, but just for the listener, if you are planning on coming to the Netherlands, one tip is get your marriage certificate, your unabridged marriage certificate, apostilled. You do it through attorney, and specific attorneys. I'm not 100% sure what they're called or what, but in any case, you do that. Maybe a step back even is make sure that even if you're not 100% sure whether you're going to immigrate, I would, if I was 18 years old now, I would get my unabridged birth certificate just in advance, because I had to wait so many months for mine to come along. So that's maybe the first tip. The other thing is to take certain things in consideration, and maybe jy het al maar 'n paar bokke uit, betaal maar 'n expert wat vir jou presies die lysie gee van jou land waar jy gaan, wat vir jou so 'n tik lysie gee van wat jy alles moet doen. Want ek was die poepel wat 'n week voor ons moet vlieg, besef ek, ek hoort nog 'n ding. En ja, daai ding het nog 2 weke aan ons tydlyn gevoeg. So ja, dit is iets om in gedagte hou.
And just, so I also had to get an unabridged birth certificate, and to be honest, I didn't even know what the hell unabridged meant before when I found out I had to get an unabridged birth certificate, because I think everyone out there has the birth certificate.
Yeah, the stock standard one.
Yeah. So make sure that it's unabridged birth certificate. And unabridged actually means the exact opposite of a condensed one. So it's like a fully, you know, complete set of all the things you need on that freaking paper.
Mapa.
Yes, 100%.
Yes.
Hospital, I don't know, all of those stuff, but make sure, I'm going to say it once more, unabridged birth certificate.
There we go.
Yeah, but just the one quick thing, because I have the passport, so I just got in here and I just mentioned I didn't need any admin or to do any admin. But actually, when I got married, so we got married in the Netherlands, because Celine is Belgian and it's just way easier than to bring everything over to South Africa and then bring it back. But actually, when we wanted to go sign the papers, they told me, they never received my unabridged birth certificate, so they don't know who my parents are, and therefore I cannot get married. So it just came to mind, but I also had to actually hand that in. So even if you go with a passport anyway, it's always good to have it in your back pocket.
Yeah, so I quickly, in the dictionary, I looked up unabridged just now, and I'll read it to you. It's not cut short or shortened, but absolutely complete. That for you is unabridged.
There we go. Is more complete as complete, though.
Okay, guys. I just quickly want to run a case study by you. Okay, my passport, I'm going to run across the room. Hold on.
Ons moet nou van haar muziek speel, wat jy hoor as jy in die wagry is op 'n telefoon call.
Sprinted across the room, and I've got the Groen Mamba, and it says it's expiring the 16th of May 2026. Okay, when's your passports? When will those expire? The South African one, for you, Sia? Only the year,
but how long is it valid? 10 years. Or, yeah, I got a new one 2 years ago, so mine is, let's say, a good 8 years still to go.
Okay, lucky.
Yeah,
mine is 2025.
But your Dutch one or something?
No, my South African one.
Okay, so I don't know the answer. Maybe one of you do you have to go back and renew it there, or can you do it through the embassy here in Den Haag?
You can do it through the embassy, but what I've heard, people wait like months and months to get the thing back. So people they wanted to travel back, but they didn't have the thing in time. My experience, I just went to Home Affairs, even now with my driver's license in December, I just went and renewed it. Same with all your documents. I would say when you go on vacation, take a day, go get it done there, and your mom or whoever can pick it up for you. And when you get back to South Africa a year later, you can just pick it up. Maybe you stay there long enough and you get it. I think it's much easier.
Yeah, so a buddy of mine actually lost his passport 2 weeks ago. He had to take a flight back from Amsterdam to Kenya because he's farming there in Kenya. And he went for his PCR test. And we took his PCR test and to show his passport as proof, you know, of identification. He put the passport back in his jeans back pocket, got on his bicycle and cycled home. And the passport fell out of his back jeans pocket, basically. And I know the whole freaking story. Then he went to the embassy to apply for a new passport. And they told him, look, it's going to take 6 to 8 months. And he said, but he doesn't have the time. He needs to get into Kenya back in like, let's say, another week's time. And so that they said, they told him the only option is to accelerate that process, you know, to be in Kenya back in 3 weeks. That they can issue him an emergency passport. But with an emergency passport, you can only fly back to South Africa. So you can't travel with an emergency passport to another country and apply for your, let's say, your actual passport there. So then he had to fly back to South Africa and they apply through Home Affairs for a new passport. So it is possible, but I think it takes, you know, a good 6 to 8 months from what I've heard. Because the thing is, they also, from what I've heard, they need to assemble a whole bunch of passports to make the sack full and then send it to, let's say, the Netherlands or whatever. I don't know what the number is, but maybe, let's say, the number is 20 passports. So if you number passport number 5 or whatever, they wait for that sack to become full and then they only ship it over.
It's scary how... yeah, it's so... We are actually so reliant on this little book, you know, and this can get lost anywhere. It's actually scary how everything is digitized and you can get anything renewed, but your passport is still such a pain in the ass.
Yeah,
really.
So look after it. Okay, guys, we're gonna move over to the SAFA index. So we started this in the last couple of episodes, and the SAFA index, every week we're gonna take every episode, we're going to take a South African product or a product that you get in South Africa and that you can also get across the world and compare the prices. So today we're doing Oma se beskuit. Sommige net Oma beskuit.
Welcome to the SAFA Index.
we can all relate when you see that, you know, die boksy, lekker beskuit in die buttermilk.
I tiny wat bak.
So do you guys enjoy a biscuit? Let's start there.
Yes, I love it. The caramel biscuitie. It's a
self to wear.
Yeah, and I must admit, I'm not a big breakfast person, but coffee and a biscuit is an absolute winner.
It's yeah, as jy gaan kamp en jy raai blik beker met 'n gasstoofie, koffietjie en so ouma beskuitjie, man.
Ja, verseker. Same. Okay, so in the Netherlands, there's two shops and both of them is €5, okay, for 500 grams of a biscuit. In the UK, the South African shop at 4.50, that's now pounds. New Zealand, on the website of Something From Home, is $8. It sounds expensive, but it isn't. It comes down to the same thing. If you take it back to euros or to rand. In Canada, shout out to Jockey Steel, who gave me these websites. Comes down to $6, Canadian dollars. That's quite cheap. And then there's Aubergine Foods in the US that they apparently quite use quite often. That's $7 for a pucky Oma biscuit. Now, I don't know the prices in Hong Kong and all of that, but and the rest of Asia or South America, but that sounds, I can pay that for a pucky Oma biscuit. It's not too bad.
No, absolutely.
Dit is bietjie warm buite, maar ek sal nou ouma beskuitjie dip hoor.
Just don't eat the whole freaking box in one morning.
Nee, en dan die volgende oggend is jy hartseer.
That's probably going to be me. If I order my next box, I'll have it for a day and it's gone. Okay guys, so we covered everything from our side. Everything that you need to take in consideration admin wise, getting your ducks in a row before you move abroad. Anything you guys want to add?
No, I think it would be interesting if someone listening and they're, I don't know, in whichever country and they had something weird or interesting that's not sort of stock standard, it would be nice to hear what procedure or process it was that they had to go through.
Yeah, so UAE, I don't know what the requirements are there. Or moving, I know of a friend who moved to India, friends that moved to Taiwan, and then friends that moved to Korea. You know, I actually wonder. I might just get in touch with them and they might just share a few strange requirements.
Yeah. Just three last points from my side, and that is share, listen, and subscribe, people.
And thumbs up, isn't it?
Yeah, like.
Right. We're paar sterretjies op podcast, Apple Podcast, of subscribe op Spotify, luister op die website, whatever you want. Just give us some good ratings. That's it.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
We appreciate it.
Okay, till next week.
Cheers, yes. Cheers.
Bye.
Follow us on your favorite podcasting platform or visit the website onsvajapodcast.com.